this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricardo on the board. SP Future up 10. NASDAQ Futures up 34. Interesting day yesterday. We had Tesla up like 40-some bucks. As, I don't know how many times we're going to talk about these driverless cars, but evidently we're going to keep talking about them. And they never seem to show up. They've got to be like 5 years behind the times, but... Anyway, the stock is up, and if you're a Tesla shareholder yesterday, and we have some, it's a good day. It's down a little bit today, 470, but it's a little bit of a blip compared to the up yesterday. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
Good morning.
Yes. How are you?
And it is dark here, so I decided in honor of the show to put on a pair of sunglasses.
Yeah, it's the future's so bright, we're wearing shades.
Yeah, except I can't see crap, so I'm going to have to go back to the other glasses.
Yeah, that'll work. I bumped into a... Hopefully, potentially, Stacks and Jacks guest last night. Young lady from Australia that I asked to be on. She works in the horse racing industry in Melbourne. Evidently, horse racing is still real big down there. And she is touring the U.S. maybe for like the second time. They get 4 weeks vacation. But every city she goes, she either goes to a game or tours the sports facility. I would never have guessed. Just, you know, some lady sitting there. But she said the stadium in Nashville is gorgeous. Football stadium. And I think they toured the one in Dallas, maybe the baseball one. They're either trying to go to a game or go to a... That's kind of odd, isn't it? Plus, I love the idea of her being in horse racing. But evidently, it's alive and well down in Australia. So there. The only problem is she talks so fast with this Aussie accent, you barely understand her, but that's...
The Aussies do have their own special version of English.
Yeah, and I thought she was... I can't tell, Kevin. I thought she was maybe mid to late 20s. Because I'm 35 or something with her accent, and I'm going, really? And I go like, no boyfriend, no hobby? I just haven't bumped into the right bloke. I'm like, okay.
Right bloke, yes.
Okay. Just haven't bumped into the right guy. Okay, then. Anyway,
that is funny though, Tom. You are at the age where everybody looks like they're 20.
I suppose, yeah. Well, you know, everybody. How can I put it this way? Everybody takes care of themselves better now. I mean, maybe it's because people don't smoke as much, but people at 35, 38, if they keep, you know, they look like they're 25. There used to be a huge difference in how you looked when you were 25 and what you look when you're late 30s. It really isn't now if you keep yourself in decent shape. I think smoking did a lot to that to people.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, you're probably right.
Or people
we still have a really huge overweight population in this country, yeah.
You're
right. I think the number of people who smoke is so far down, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I don't. The whole idea of, it seems it's worse in certain sections, but in some of the minorities, it's really bad. I mean, there's a lot of African American people come to bars down here. Obviously, a lot of work downtown. I mean, a lot of the women are. I mean, we're not talking, you know, 150 when you should be 130. We're talking, you know, three bills. I mean, it's huge, and it's okay. It's considered fashionable, and you're attractive still. I mean, which you are. I mean, it's not like you But it's really, you know, 100, 150 pounds overweight is like okay. It's kind of not okay if you're 30 years old, for God's sake. I mean, it's probably not okay anytime, but anyway, not up to us to tell people what to eat or whatever. But the interesting world we're having with Musk, and I just I don't know why I'm down on the guy a little bit, but he's flipped. Let's put it this way, Kevin. I think it's an example to me of these people that have like a lot of money, and these the people maybe really are running the world. I don't know. May hope not, but they really don't have any sort of any sense of owing somebody something. I don't know. This guy's got $9.2 billion from the government, basically with Democrats in charge, and now I'm out with you guys. Boy, oh boy, it's a good thing.
Oh, why might that be, Tom?
Well, it's okay for him to get that. And that was okay.
Might have pushed him away from the Democrats?
I didn't say the Democrats were perfect. I'll never say
what
that.
What might have pushed him away from the Democrats?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I didn't tell you they were perfect.
Maybe he thinks he's going to get more from the next guy.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't think these people...
Or maybe he bought a platform, opened it up, not totally, as we saw from a message from Hal this morning that I saw, not totally opened up for completely free speech, but loosened up the reins to allow many more opinions to be aired on there. And maybe that pissed off his former constituency, and they have done nothing but roast him and excoriate him since.
Maybe that's what pushed him away.
Maybe the loyalty didn't go both ways here.
When you're getting money from somebody, the loyalty doesn't have to go both ways. Just saying.
I'm not sure what you just said to me.
If you borrow money from Vito Corleone, you owe him. He doesn't owe you.
Yeah, got it. So you're saying he shouldn't have crossed the Democrats because they're the equivalent to the Corleone family. Okay, I'll buy that. I'll agree with you then.
I'm saying if I come to you and say, gee, Kevin, things are tough, how about lending me $100,000, and you do, the next thing I do is say, gee, Kevin should be canned from this place he's working. I can't, you know, it's, I'm just
no,
saying.
No, you left out the middle step. They didn't like the way you conducted your business. They didn't like the way you conducted your business, so they basically started the cancellation process.
All right, my opinion on him is that he didn't want the government doing as much censorship, which I don't either. And he's the new censor, because he's smarter than the government. That's my problem with him and Bezos.
Well,
and all
I do
these
think
guys.
He's the new censor, but I think his version of censorship is, you're doing degrees, it is far less draconian than what the government had going.
I'm sure some people would say they'd rather have Bezos owning the Washington Post, because they'd rather have him controlling the editorial thing than the guys who were there. I don't want him controlling any editorial thing. I don't want anybody controlling that. It's a newspaper. I'm not trading one person's censorship for another, because in everybody's mind, anything that they don't like shouldn't be out there. There are very few people that actually like a free press and like a free country. Nobody really likes competition in your industry, like in everybody else's industry. This is just human nature.
Yeah, I get all of that, Tom. The question I'll go back to is, who turned on whom?
I'm saying when you take that kind of money from people, they can't turn on you. You can only turn on them.
I just don't think that. I don't buy that.
Okay, he's got $9.2 billion of our money, and now he's a big bazoo. I have a problem with that. Guess what? If you and I had $9.2 billion of government money, we'd be big shots too.
Cool. I'm with you there. Yeah, and I'm...
And he thinks I am
absolutely dead set against all the subsidies that have been directed not just to Tesla but to all of the automakers and anybody who was involved in electric cars, batteries, all of that kind of stuff, all of which is totally subsidized, and I'm dead set against it. Okay, so let's stipulate that. But hey, You know, if the guy went and bought a business, much like Bezos did, he took his money, he went and he bought a platform, a different kind of platform, but a platform nonetheless. And as long as he towed the line of the party, he was fine. Everybody was fine with that. But apparently they didn't like the way Musk operated his platform, because he allowed disinformation on his platform. We know we can't have disinformation of any kind, disinformation defined as not the way I want it told. And so he gets beat up for that. And yeah, they pushed him away, Tom.
I cannot go with this. Everything wrong with Musk and Trump is something somebody else did to them. I can't go there.
So did I say that? Did I say that in any way?
I talked to other people besides you, by the way.
Okay, but you're arguing with me.
I've heard from.
So if you're going to throw that argument at me, I'd really like to have said it.
The idea that Musk is so brilliant, God, Kevin, all kinds of people are smart. If everybody who had a good idea in this country all of a sudden immediately got a bunch of money from the rest of us, guess what? 1 out of 10 is going to end up being really smart. I mean,
how did our discussion go to that though? That doesn't follow.
Let's put it this way: I would have a little more loyalty. It would just be me.
Okay, then that's fine. That's fine. You would not cross the Masters. That's cool. Okay.
I didn't say that. I'm saying is.
Don't like that when I do that, huh?
No, I didn't say that. But I'm somehow or another. I really don't know the answer to this, Kevin. I mean, to get all this kind of money from other people's money. You know, we had on the Democratic side this morning. We have Quigley, the former government of Illinois governor, and you know, he tell you what, Kevin. This is an interesting story. I was invited to an opening of Loop Capital. Loop Capital is a very embedded minority brokerage firm. They have people on TV a lot. And they've gotten every advantage known to man by being minorities. And one of the gentlemen actually, you know, I think he grew up in Inglewood or something, had a, you know, a rough early life. The other guy's grandmother went to law school, right? So it's not exactly tag day for that dude. But anyway, they end up on every piece of, you know, any kind of bond that Illinois comes out with or whatever, and they have a, I think they have the best skybox at the Bears Stadium, or if it isn't, the one right next to it. Anyway, they get new offices, and they throw this party, and I get invited. And the guys work there, great people. I mean, I have no issue with that. And so Quigley's there, and Quigley was governor for a while, and he's run for everything. And he's kind of a character sort of guy, but he's
I don't remember him being governor ever.
Oh, sure he was.
Yeah, I believe you.
Yeah, 4 years only.
I
think he was
years.
After, who was the Republican guy that had the heart issue? What the hell was his name? He was there for a while and everybody liked him, but then he had some heart problems and he ended up having to resign. He quit politics at a relatively early age, and he was in really good shape and everything. He just had bad genes or something. But anyway, he was, go to the thing, and he's there, it like nobody's talking to him because he's not one of these guys that just gives you stuff. You know, he's not. And there were a couple other guys there. I'm not sure if it was Madigan or a couple other people. They got all kinds of people kissing the ring, right? I end up talking to the guy for a half hour just because he was lonely. He's talking to me. I mean, he didn't even know me. Just to have somebody to look like he was talking to. But, you know, because he didn't. But anybody who in government who does stuff out there, they sort of expect you're taking money. Anyway, his new plan is they're going to take a 3% surcharge to everybody who makes over $1 million and pour it into the property tax, like a property tax fund for people that can't afford their property taxes. And, you know, it is interesting to me, Kevin, is that you and I, when we're not jousting, and all the other people on the show, we have been for how many years have we been on now? 12, 13 years. We have been talking constantly about this total split in income or wealth between some people and the other people, and how it's eventually going to harm, you know, society. Because even if you're one of the rich people, you probably have a feeling that you're better off with you know, 500 people buying a bass boat than you are one person buying a gazillion-dollar yacht. It's just healthier. It's better. It's better for business because you have more customers. I mean, it's just a better thing economically. Even if you're one of the people that has the money, you probably realize that, you know, you don't want to be nobles and serfs again, which kind of we're heading towards. But this now, you see it in the Trump campaign, where he sees, you know, he has his ear to the ground. I'll say that, and he knows that the people like in the restaurant bar business aren't doing so hot. They're probably not gonna. You're not going to see a whole lot of bartenders unless you're at the one percenter joints buying their own home or buying their own car. So he's sitting there going, okay, in his own way, he's saying, wait a minute, this is uneven. How about if we don't charge these people income taxes? Now, I think that's the wrong way to go about it because all of a sudden you get like Caesar. You know, you don't pay taxes, but you do. I mean, you can't go down that road, in my opinion. So then you've got Harris saying, hey, look, it looks to me like none of these people can afford a house. Guess what? We're going to pony up $25,000 for everybody to buy a house. And now Quigley's doing the same thing in his own kind of, in my way, ridiculous way. He put a surcharge on the people that are paying legitimate taxes all over the place, property tax, everything else that have gone up. It's not like rich people don't pay property taxes. They pay a hell of a lot of property tax. So now you're going to, if you drive 50 of these people out of the state, you end up less, don't you? Not more. But everybody is now recognized this big schism that's happened and is still happening, and they're all coming up with, in my opinion, really half-assed ways to fix it. Or maybe it's just campaign talk, which is possible too. They don't have any intention of anything for anybody. They're just talking about it. But I mean, you can sort of sense that, in my opinion, that all of the politicians, no matter what side of the aisle they're on, are recognizing through some feedback that there's a problem. But I don't see anybody with any sort of a legitimate plan or that they can just talk about during the campaign. I mean, Dan yesterday agreed with me that none of the things that economically the people on the show care about have even been talked about in this campaign. I mean, in terms of, you know, money supplies and taxation, things like that, I don't see anything like that. I don't see anybody with any kind of a plan for the deficit. One wants to spend more and the other one wants to cut taxes, which is exactly the opposite way of getting to where. I mean, I wonder what the hell we're doing here, Kevin. I mean, they sense these problems. They don't seem to have any idea of the size of the problems and what they've created in the last, I'll say, combined 8 years. Or is it just me?
The politicians that do have proposals.
Well, proposals are like, you know, bottom.
No, I mean, legitimate, but you know that are at least thought through. I could take Bernie Sanders and say, that guy is so wrong on the solutions, but at least he offers them.
Well, I mean, his problem is he obviously doesn't own a calculator. I'll lob this one out there. I'm gonna put a tax on stock transactions, and I'm gonna solve world hunger. What are you gonna do?
Well,
what? You know, I mean,
first of all, we're going to make people pay their fair share. You know about the fair share.
Well, there's no question.
Because who wouldn't salute that?
But there are glittering holes in the tax thing where you can point to three or four things where people don't pay their fair share and they never get changed. Absolutely, they don't get changed.
Right. Why is that? It's because we have a tax code that is so complex. And they love it that way because then every time I want to make a change that favors somebody, I can just bury it into what they can, what's deductible expense and what's not, what's subsidized, what's not. And all of that would go away with a much less complex, right down to the no deductions, just a percentage to everybody type of tax code. Because as I have said many times, if you can get your taxable income down to zero, go ahead, charge me 50% of that.
I think that there's a few things you could do with the tax code that would make it a hell of a lot fairer, and you wouldn't even have to touch the complexity. You wouldn't have to change. You wouldn't do anything. You need a.
If you don't touch the complexity, you're never going to make it fair.
I'll give you three things you can do. One of the things is the size of these corporations and the power they now have. Get rid of the double taxation, where these guys have the excuse of never paying dividends or they're paying small dividends and keeping all the money themselves and paying wages. raise the corporate income tax and make the dividends deductible. Make it 30%, and yet if you pay out a dividend to you or me, we pay on our dividend, we don't pay twice. That's the entire reason why, stated reason why Microsoft has $9 zillion or Warren Buffett won't pay a dividend. It's Tesla. How much money does this guy get paid? They'll never pay a dividend. Right? So, I mean, that needs to stop. The idea that if you croak, your stock goes to your kid at today's basis and nobody ever pays the capital gains on it, that's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. Now, again, would I do something with the capital gains law? That law sucks, Kevin. The idea that you pay on capital gains after a year, the thing should be laddered. If somebody bought IBM when it was $20 80 years ago, should they pay on the whole thing since the prices have gone up God how much in 80? I think it should be, capital gains rate should be 20% for years 1 through 3. It should be 16% for years 3 through 12. And if you bought a house 50 years ago, the rate, your capital gain should be like 5%. Why the hell? You didn't even make any money on the place, right? All you did is it's up in value because the dollar's down.
Well, I get what you're saying. I can salute a lot of a lot of the ideas of what you should be doing on capital gains and what you should be doing on dividends and all of that kind of thing. However, I'm just, you know, I recoil at the thought of saying, let's, years 1 through 6, let's do this, years 5 through 7. As soon as you start doing that, you start getting behavior based on that. I don't think that's productive. I do think that it is a place where you begin to get, you start working corruption into the game.
Again. No, you're not. I should have said, actually, I got this idea from Dan Rostenkowski. You should index it. I mean, if you buy, well, I hope you did. I hope you bought NVIDIA last year at $100. If it was $100, now it's $140. 1 year to the day, if you sell it, okay, and you make $40, the capital gains rate drops. I think it's like, what is it, 20 or something? I should know this, but I'm not a tax guy. Okay, now, I think that's a little extreme in terms of savings. But if you bought a house in 1955 for $25,000 and now you sold it for $300,000, well, the 25 is you didn't even make any money, did you? You know what I'm saying? Well, you have to have some. It's not like we held prices constant, have we?
Nope.
So I think you need to index it, is all I'm saying. So a capital gain from 30 years ago shouldn't be taxed at the same rate as the one 366 days ago, is all I'm saying.
All right, but that becomes the calculation of your capital gain, not the tax rate.
Well, it means that you index it. You look at the year.
Yeah, you deflate it, or you discount it, or whatever you want to call it. You can do that. I'm fine with that. But when it gets right down to it, it's one rate, and there's no special treatment.
And I think we need.
But my problem is that there's special treatment for certain industries. That's one of the biggest ones. There's special treatment for certain kinds of activities. That's a problem.
Well, I have this argument whenever I ride long distance at my borough, we always get on this subject, and he's convinced. Now Dan is a CPA, and he really knows a lot about taxes, like way more than I'll ever know. But he's convinced if we went to like a value-added tax, that would be better. Or some people want this consumption tax, which, by the way, we already have with a sales tax. We've got every one of these taxes, except for maybe the value-added, which is sort of the same thing as a tax we have now. But
yeah, it's just when do you collect it?
Yeah, my issue always is the same people that rig this system. If you spend 10 years putting together a new system, the same people are going to find a way to rig that one. It's sort of like Obamacare. The same people that were rigging the old system, the drug companies, the hospitals, found a way in the writing of the new system to rig it even more. So you didn't get anywhere, really, did you?
Well, no. Yeah, we did get somewhere. It got worse.
I don't believe that. Reason why I don't believe that is I think not a lot of people. And why should you? I mean, I. It was always kind of a fascinating subject to me, healthcare, and I knew a couple of people who were in the healthcare industries and hospitals, and I used to quiz them over adult beverages and how all the you know, the billing gets paid, how you decide who gets charged what and whatever. I don't think there's a respect for how screwed up the system was before Obamacare. It's not like that system would still be standing today if there was no Obamacare. Whether Obamacare, you know my opinion of how it played out without addressing any of the costs, but the idea that somehow the system before that would still be up and running and it was fine, that's just not true, Kevin. It wasn't fine, and it wouldn't be up and running. It was a disaster.
Well, I don't know if it would still be up and running as it was, as it was at the status quo ante. It might still be running. It might not. We could argue that one for a while, I suppose. But that's not really the point. The point always is that insurance is going to set the floor. It is going to. You're never going to ever have the price drop below what insurance is willing to pay. And because the government is so involved in insurance, it's not like it. This is all going to be vigorously negotiated or anything like that. So you're basically not allowing any market force to have any influence on the cost of healthcare.
Without a doubt.
In the rare areas where it does, with procedures that are not covered, what has happened to the prices? The prices have come down. Classic example, LASIK.
Well, the machines got cheaper.
Everything got cheaper. Yeah. But if that were universally insured, the price would be set at the floor. It would never change.
I think it actually is pretty much insured now. Most people are getting their LASIKs now for the cataracts and other reasons, so...
Well, that's different. Yeah. That's a medical procedure. But yeah, if you're getting it for convenience, maybe insurance policies. I haven't looked. I'm not interested in having it. So, but the reason it came down when it did is because it was almost never covered. It was always an elective process or an elective procedure, and as a result, it was subject to the forces of competition.
We have to dash off to a break here, but the whole history of the thing, and I don't hold the. I mean, as you go from party to party, seemingly neither party really wanted to touch this. I mean, Hillary came out with a plan. We're talking how many years ago, for God's sake, 30? Hillary came out with a plan, and all the Republicans did was say the plan sucked. Now, whether it did or didn't, I never
remember. Oh, it did.
Okay, but say it did. All right, so then Clinton didn't do anything more with it for his remaining 6 years. George Bush wouldn't touch it like if it was a hot flame. So now we're 16 years into when we recognized there was a problem, and neither one of the parties has a solution. So finally, it gets bad enough to where the Obama administration drops one on there, and I don't think he had the drive or the people around him to make sure. He ended up with the hospitals and the insurance companies basically writing the bill. So here, that's where we are today.
But I think the bill was written totally to walk us into the National Health Service.
Okay,
that style.
What about you? What about George?
Totally to walk us into that, and it was going to as long as you had the Cadillac plans, you were going to be forcing more and more people into the public markets, the pools, and every time you did, you would ultimately have because of the tax deductibility to where the indexes were set and so on. The Cadillac plan was going to become, just the typical plan that people had, was going to qualify under Cadillac.
Why don't you?
And it was going to be taxable.
Why don't you have the same enmity for Bush for doing nothing for 8 years than criticizing the person who finally did something?
You don't think I have enmity for Bush?
I mean, he didn't do anything. And the Republicans stalled anything in the last 6 years of the Clinton administration. So we went 10 years knowing we had a problem without doing anything. And now this guy does something. And by the way, it's horrible, but it's, I don't know. Is it worse than was there
remember,
before?
Remember, Tom, when you say somebody stalled, maybe they just did not allow a really, really crappy, really crappy legislation to go forward. It's the same as this, quote, bipartisan immigration bill that failed several months ago.
Does anybody even...
You can say, oh, the Republicans blocked it. So did a bunch of Democrats, by the way, but that's... We won't talk about them. But we can say the Republicans blocked it. See, they're obstructionists. Well, the bill sucked. It would allow... You had to go like 5 days in a row, 5,000 people crossing the border, and that's the border crossings caught, exempting children from it, and then any kind of action would kick in. And so if you went 5,000, 4,999, sorry, no action.
All right, I don't know if anybody remembers the Hillary bill. I don't think you do either. And I sure, we do know that Bush did nothing. Right?
Yeah.
Which, whatever, S&P futures up 13, NASDAQ futures up 49, and then we end up with a crummy bill on top of it. You know, so it's not like any side here couldn't have done a better job if they really did it. Nobody wanted to touch it. I mean, anyway, when we come back, I'll give you a little bit of an idea of what it was in the world before, and it was pretty awful. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricardo on board, SP futures up 13, Nasdaq futures up 51. Trying to come back from a pretty crummy week. I don't think we're going to make it up on the week here, but it'd be nice to have a decent day because we had three crummy days in a row, and it's not good. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 229.6%, Hang Seng up 100.5%, 20,590 as they continue to rack 'em sock 'em there. Shanghai up 19 points, 0.6%, 32.99. China has done. Extending this credit way out again, they push these markets up. So, again, kind of tells the rest of the world that if you just get your leaders to put money in there, we're all going to be wealthy. I don't think it's helped the Chinese economy at all, but it certainly has kicked the market up. You know, if you're one of those that thinks the market's the economy, well, then there you go. Over in Europe, we're down a little bit, but just when I say a little bit, I mean it. DAX down 8, so call that flat. FTSE down 20.2%, CAC around down 22.3%, so very slightly to the down over there. Yesterday, Dow was down 140, S&Ps were up 12, and NASDAQ was up 138, mostly driven by Tesla, up like over 40 bucks. Bonds, we actually snuck down a little bit on this 10-year, to 4.19. So it was going up every day. Now it seems to have stopped that, at least the last couple days. Bund up 2 basis points, 2.27. Japan down 1 basis point, 0.95. Oil up 62 cents, but still right in the 70.81. Can't get out. It'll run up on some world news. 73, 74, and right back down again. I think there's just a lot of oil out there. Brent, 59 cents, 74.97. Natural gas unchanged, 252. RBOB up a penny, 204. Gold down 11 bucks, but 27.37. Still hanging in there. Yesterday was an odd day. The gold miners got their butt kicked because one of the gold companies came out and said their margins were shrinking. How the hell did their margins be shrinking when gold's up like 300 bucks a share? Very strange report. Silver down 31 cents, 33.48. Copper down a penny, 4.33. We have Bitcoin down 190, 67,920. And we have the U.S. dollar, which has been a horse, is unchanged. They 108 against the euro. But again, that was over 110 for quite a while. Same thing with the British pound. We're 129. We were 130.5, 131 for a while. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. It's dark out.
Morning, Chief. It is definitely dark out. It's 6:40 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 50 degrees right now with a high of 63. A shower in spots early this morning. Otherwise, it's going to be breezy with clouds and giving way to some sun. So we're going to get to see some sun today, some vitamin D. Tonight is going to be mainly clear and breezy with a low of 47 degrees. Over to Phoenix, Arizona, 62 degrees right now with a high of 98. Sunny and very hot. Caution is advised if doing intense physical activities outside. Tonight will be clear to partly cloudy with a low of 65 degrees. Over to traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, we're looking at 22 minutes. 40 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 29 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 23 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is another 31 minutes. Rain is definitely playing a part in that. Lastly, sports. Let's start with the NFL. Yesterday, the Rams beat the Vikings 30-20. And this Sunday, October 27, we got the Cardinals playing the Dolphins at 12 p.m. in Miami. And the Bears playing the Commanders at 3:25 p.m. in Washington, if I'm not wrong. Actually, let me double check that.
They're in Washington. Actually, they're in Landover, Maryland.
Okay, yeah, Landover. That's the word. Yeah, Landover. Anyway, NBA today, we got the Bulls playing the Bucks at 7 p.m. and the Suns playing the Lakers at 9 p.m. MLB World Series Game 1 is today. The Yankees play the Dodgers at 7:08 p.m. And lastly, we got another game of the NHL today. Predators play the Blackhawks at 7:30 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Hey, Kevin, did you have a chance to read that thing I sent you yesterday from our buddy, Mr. Shanahan, Tammy?
I did not. No, I saw it this morning. Didn't have a chance to read
it. You know, we have been talking, you and I, maybe a little bit more with Hal, about, you know, this oil prices just can't seem to go anywhere, which is fine. I mean, stability there is terrific. And I think it's 70, 71. It's a really good price for the new technology and the fracking. I think we probably are still at a record production here, aren't we? And so it seems to be a price level at which people are happy to drill. And it comes out to three something at the pump, at least in burbs here. The city's not there, which isn't the same as two something, but it's a hell of a lot better than four something. It seems like oil's in a little bit of an equilibrium, maybe even a little bit of a glut. And I'll kind of paraphrase a little bit for you, Kevin. In the South China Sea, evidently, or wherever the hell it is over there, Tom Shanahan, who was a contributor to the show for a long time until he moved his job from Chicago, he's our oil expert. Evidently, there's all these old tankers running around over there trying to, like, you know, getting rid of, we talk about all the time, Kevin, like the Iranian oil. These guys are actually, on calm days, they're transferring oil from one old flag tanker that might have came out of Iran into another old flag tanker that's going somewhere else, to North Korea or someplace, which is, like, really hard to do on the high seas. I guess they must wait for... Well, evidently, one of them, then two of them, like, bang into each other in the article. So they both managed to make it somewhere without leaking, and the crew disappeared. it's like
they scattered. It's like, don't blame me.
It's total bizarro world with all these old tankers over there, with all this oil that's coming from all these different places, where you're trying to fool people, and you know, and I guess it's dangerous because, you know, people track these tankers, and and evidently they all have what's the thing that the airplanes have, the device they're making home in on, what do they call the thing?
The black box?
Well, no, it's the transponder.
Oh, okay.
Evidently, when they don't want to be seen or heard, they shut the transponder off. So if some other guy's coming along in his tanker, he doesn't know you're there. Evidently, it's an absolute circus over there. which I guess looking at the prices that we see now and what we, you know, Carl and Mike Murphy and everybody allege that, you know, Iran is pushing oil to these other places and essentially a barter system. I mean, they're going there with a tanker of oil to North Korea and they're coming back with, you know, whatever, rockets and other kinds of crap. Evidently, that's how it's being done, and it's a real mess. I suppose we should have imagined something like that was happening before we got the article, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, because, you know, you can make rules. You know, rules are the adage that they're made to be broken. No, it's rules are made for workarounds.
Yeah, well, I do think, even though I'm not a chemist, that if you were to get the right guy or lady and give her a hypo of the oil in that tanker, he or she could probably identify exactly where it came from. I think. Is that true?
Probably.
I know they can do that with marijuana samples and everything else, but essentially there's a DNA to oil, right? From wherever part of the world. I probably can't tell you which well, but it, I think there's a huge difference between Venezuelan oil and West Texas, isn't there?
I would guess. I don't know anything about that industry, though.
So. But who even is in charge of ships turning transponders off and on and things? I mean, is there some sort of a worldwide maritime group that actually monitors? And are there rules, or can you do whatever you want?
I think when you're in international waters, you can probably get away with whatever you want, but I can't. I don't know that part of it. I probably should learn it because I'm likely to want, you know, have somebody ask me to teach a transportation systems class, but not my area of expertise.
Hey, but if you ever ask you to do that, you got to help her. You know, I love that.
Oh yeah, well, and yeah, so, you know, then you're getting into all that, you know, that part of the supply chain is all about the details and the laws and the regulations. So
anyway, Kevin, just as a quick summary of my view of what healthcare was before, and this was a long, should never have done this. It was over at the guy's house, and, well, of course, Audrey and his wife have been friends forever, sort of chitty-chatting somewhere, and they didn't care about us. And this dude was the head of purchasing at one of the, let's say, the biggest hospital in Illinois outside of Chicago. This has to be, when was Clinton in there, 92? I mean, this is a long time ago. And I said, by the way, how do all these people pay? And he goes, oh, you wouldn't believe it. It's a total, you know, goat bleep. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, if you have a, before the term Cadillac policy was even come across, if you have a high-end policy where we just put everything on the bill we can, you know, the kid's leaving with the $200 box of new diapers, that kind of crap. He goes, those insurance companies, you send them the bill and they just pay. He goes, but they're getting less and less because now you're starting to see some combination in the insurance industries and some people trying to give discounts to firms like PTI and other places. So they're actually coming from hospital and they're trying to get what they call now your network. Okay, so if we send somebody here, how much is an appendectomy? How much is this? How much is a baby? You know, if there's no complications. So you have probably 20% of the people still paying whatever we put on the bill. And he goes, they're essentially insuring, for lack of a better term, all the rest of the people because they're paying way more than they have to. Then there's the people that have the negotiated rates, which is an area that's growing. And again, this is 30-some years ago. He says, now those people, we still make a profit on that, but nothing like the other one. I mean, we're not sending them out with the $200 batch of diapers. Then there's a group after that, which is Medicare. And he said, we pretty much break even on that. Then there's the Medicaid, which we lose money on constantly. And he said something about if you get like $150 a day, whether you do brain surgery or we don't do anything. Some bizarre deal they had. This is 30-year-old Medicaid. Then he said, there's the people who just show up and don't have anything. He said, which you have to take. And in those days, you just didn't have to. Now I think you can. What was the term out of MASH? You field dress them and ship them over to county. I don't think you could do that then. I think you actually had to keep them. So he said this whole thing is a, you know, it's a boat that's about to sink, because the people on the top are getting the idea that they're insuring everybody else. So essentially, your insurance comes from other people in the hospital paying more than they had to. He goes, the ship is just not, it's got a leak. And I think the theory behind the Obamacare, and again, is how it played out, You get no disagreement out of me on that. You and I, finally we found something we agree on. But the original idea was, hey, if everybody had insurance, it would actually lower the insurance prices for the people who have it and have to subsidize the people who don't. And if we did this right, without going socialist, we could find a way where you know, people don't show up with no insurance and no money. We try and find a way where everybody has they contribute somehow and have some insurance, so we kind of even this all up. And compared to what it was before, the theory there, I think, made sense. The execution, as I agree with you, didn't work out so hot, right?
Well, no, it didn't work out so hot at all. But I absolutely believe that it was designed, and that was the spoken out loud theory, but it was designed so that systematically, over a period of years, that the tax structure on what they called Cadillac plans, and what qualified as a Cadillac plan. I always loved that we use Cadillacs, because nobody ever, you know, nobody ever said the Mercedes plan or anything like that.
This is before we bought those German cars, Cadillac.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was in 2010? No, right. It wasn't. But the idea was, and this was stated, this was I forget the guy's name who was, you know, infamously on record saying talking about the stupidity of the American voter and that they just didn't understand any of this stuff. So, but Obama, he was against the Cadillac plan until he had it explained to him that if you tax them and it's tied to inflation, that step by step, what you're going to do is you're going to throw more every year. You're going to throw more plans into the taxable area. And that would force companies to abandon them and to throw their people into the exchanges. They may gross them up a little bit to cover the implications of being taxed, but they would throw them into the exchanges. And once you had enough people into the exchanges, essentially you could then have the government just take over everything.
Well,
and do it like the National Health Service in England.
Well, that's, you know, whether that was the motive, you know, I.
You're
probably right.
On record as saying that's how we discussed it.
But
that's how this was built.
Okay, but the theory, the economic theory, you know, it's actually fairly similar to, Kevin, is the thing I was ranting about earlier, the Tesla stuff. And we're not, you know, you and I aren't that old. When I was in college or in grad school in University of Chicago, there were guys opining.
We are that old, Tom, but keep going.
I mean, in cosmic time, we're not. Let's put it that way. There were guys already talking about, okay, we have pollution. And pollution was pretty friggin' bad when I was in Chicago, and other places. And they said, okay, well, we're going to have pollution. We're just going to have to do it. Why don't we do it in a way where the dirty stuff, at least the dirty stuff, we're manufacturing diamonds and not like crummy blankets or something. So the idea was you could buy, for X number of pollution, you had to buy credits. So if economically, if there was an exchange or something, it said, okay, only the people with the highest value items are going to pollute, and the other people just say, well, I can't afford the pollution, so I won't make something crummy and ship it to China. Of course, that's not what they were talking about. It somehow would work, but that's what happens in this Tesla thing. Why should somebody, some poor guy going to buy a pickup truck for his farm have to send this mope a $500 check? It turns out to be something. In theory, it's like, okay, well, the people who are still buying the dirty cars maybe should subsidize the people buying it. In theory, it sounds great, but once you get something out of a college classroom, a lot of stuff doesn't work, Kevin. You know that.
Oh, it definitely doesn't work. I do wish, because I know you're not fond of Musk, but I wish you would also lump in there, you know, every other auto manufacturer who makes an electric vehicle along with Musk, because they all get the same largesse.
Well, they get it from...
That if you're, wait, let me finish. If it's General Motors, it's kind of buried in with everything else that we see in their financial statements and their performance, whereas it is sort of the reason for being for Tesla Motors. So I get that, and they wouldn't be anywhere. But he's, but we should look at this on a broader scale, and I think that's important. And I don't think it's important to say, well, what about these guys? I think it's important to say, it's not just that we're spending, you know, money subsidizing Tesla. We're spending money subsidizing a whole industry that is making a product that people don't want.
Well, but yeah, the thing you just mentioned, what actually has happened, is, well, actually it hasn't happened necessarily to Ford or GM, but a regular car, if you bought it, or truck from Ford or GM, they used to have to send essentially Musk the check. But now if they have their own electric division, for the extent that they have an electric car popping out the door, they get to send themselves that check.
Yeah.
So, but the guy buying a pickup truck is still paying more, which is, you know, somewhere along the line. I mean, now we've got what, next year, and I'm not for people getting all bleep faced and going out and driving at all. But the idea now that we have to have essentially a breathalyzer in every car, I mean, who pays for that? Some guy who's never had a drink in his life, he's got to pay for that? Why?
Yeah, it's you know, it shows up, that thought process shows up everywhere. Student loan forgiveness. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't go to college, or I'm not, my kids aren't going to college, and so I have to pay off somebody else's student loans. It shows up in all kinds of places, and it is just really bad policy.
Well, it's not, how can I say, it's you and I agree that it ended up bad, okay? But it's exactly like that's why in the show I think everything, you know, everything counts on everything else. It's exactly why Trump wants to have people not pay taxes that don't look like they're doing so hot, and yeah, why she wants to give somebody who's not doing so hot. It's the same thing. We had this government or got themselves involved in colleges with this loan program and all this other kind of stuff. All of a sudden, you see tuitions balloon to some incredible number, not where you guys are or anything like that, because you're the other side of that. You're trying
no,
to keep
but
things
up. Ours are still affected by that. Our pricing is still affected by that. I mean, because it shows up in the cost of everything throughout the educational system.
Okay, but
because when there's that much money, that much subsidy money, then what's that going to do to the cost of textbooks?
Okay, but
you know, what's that, you know, there's all kinds of other things that are going to do. So I'm not, you know, I know I work at a place that does its best to control the costs and make value for students, but I think those same things are definitely endemic in.
Okay,
in,
but I'm saying now, if
my
you
college too,
if you are a current politician or just an observer like we are, I mean, we're not politicians. Oh God, you're just an observer. I think you and I can agree on an awful lot. We had the young lady on from Indiana, Russell brought on, was it 3 weeks ago? Her whole life future. Not her whole life future, but a lot of her life, unless you, you know, sound crass, unless you find some guy with some family with nothing but dough. You know, but you know, whatever. But I'm saying, we've had this thing, and we've got Notre Dame at 70 grand instead of 3 when you and I were there. And if you put it in the CPI calculator, Notre Dame's tuition should be 22, not 70. I mean, we're not even on the same page. It's not like it's 25. I mean, we've ballooned this up. And we somehow have people who have gotten these loans to the point where they're supposed to be making all this money, and guess what? People aren't making that much money more than they did 20 years ago, but the prices sure as hell are higher. So now, as a politician, you look at this and you go, here's 2 million people that have got this student loan staring them in the face, and they're never going to own a house. The kid upstairs from me in my building, he'll tell you right to his face, I'm never going to own a house, I'm never going to own a new car because I got this student loan thing. So you sit there and you go, what have we done, we collectively, the politicians, and is there a way to fix it? Now, is there a way to fix it without moral hazard? I don't think so. I think there's ways to go about it that I would do differently, and I would say, look, we've been charging these people, not lately, but we were charging these people 6.5% when Jeff Bezos can borrow at 2.5%. You can't do that. You can't scalp your own youth, for God's sake. So, okay, let's figure out a way to drop this. Not that the government has any money to do anything with. Let's drop this interest rate in arrears for the last 10 years and reduce people's loans by that amount. And, oh, by the way, if Kevin O'Neill paid his off 5 years ago and he was paying 6.5%, we're going to send him a check. We're not going to favor the people that currently have him. against the people who have paid him off.
Against the people who were really industrious and paid him.
Well,
down.
Maybe
well,
how about
if you how about if you want relief? Then there's some service involved.
Well, okay, but what I'm saying is,
there's lots of ways to do this that aren't just saying, never mind.
I get you.
You're off the hook.
I get you, but we have people. I think from what I've heard from people who sent me notes and stuff that they have like an aunt who's being chased down in a nursing home because the person who thinks she signed is dead, and her name's on the low. Come on, get off it. Find some way if is a student loan the only thing on earth you can't discharge in a bankruptcy hearing? I mean, we don't want to go back to the original story where the three doctors got out of med school, immediately declared bankruptcy, and were home free. But there's got to be a middle ground there somewhere, isn't there?
Yeah, I just say we beat the shit out of people when they offend me.
Oh, that's it's a lot easier.
We go with that.
I have a
very important question before we turn it over to Carl. And that is, and I've asked you important questions along these lines before, but what name goes on the back of a jersey with the occasional Ichiro exception?
Should be your last name.
Should be your last name. If you are Joe Smith Jr., are you Joe Jr. or are you Smith Jr.?
I'm thinking you're Joe Jr.
You are Joe Jr. So why do they keep putting Smith Jr. on the back of the jersey?
Well, if you have the exact same name as your dad, I could see J. Smith Jr. or something.
No, well, yeah, that you could do that. Are they afraid that somebody will be confused with the father?
I would think that.
Because you are not Smith Jr., so we are going with inaccuracy, and that has become very much in vogue to do it that way.
Well, I was a...
Occasionally, then, we get people doing seniors. Now, we also see people where there's the same name on a team, like on a college team, this is more common, where you get the same name. And so then they'll put J. Smith and R. Smith for Robert Smith or something like that. And I even remember Brigham Young had a quarterback named John Smith, and they had several J. Smiths, so they actually put J.O. period. Smith on the back of his jersey because apparently the number isn't enough of a tiebreaker.
Yeah, you would think it would be.
This is just stupidity with jersey stuff.
Well, Kevin,
it's one of my favorite peeves, though.
It should be obvious. This is not any kind of a slam on anybody. Well, maybe it is.
I'm all up for slams.
Some people want to call attention to themselves. Whatever it is, they got to be different. If there's a law that says your car can't be noisy, there's a guy who wants his car noisy because everybody has to look at him and say, look at this guy. There's always got to be somebody who draws attention to himself. If nobody wears a hat, you got to wear a hat. If everybody wears a blue suit, somebody's got to wear a pink suit or something, a red suit, a maroon suit. I was never one of those people. I never wanted to call attention to myself. Some people do. So what do you think my conundrum would have been? Since I don't know if you knew this or not. But my dad was the same name, and also his uncle was the same name. So I could have been a junior, or I could have been the third, right? I could have been either one of them.
I believe you would be the third if... I think it's direct lineage, so it would have to be your grandfather would be the...
But he was close to me.
If you remember our buddy Walt, he was Walter C. Szymanski II. Because his dad wasn't Walter C., but his grandfather was.
Well, I was half-assed direct lineage, because the original Tom Howell...
Way to go, Tom. That's you all over, half-assing.
Well, here's the story. My grandmother married the original Tom Howell, and he died young in some kind of an electrical accident in one of the stockyards places. So, but she didn't have any kids. They weren't married that long. And like 4 years later, she married his younger brother.
Oh, okay.
So my dad was named after the original husband and brother, and I was named after him. So it wasn't a direct descendant, but pretty close.
Yeah, pretty close, yeah.
But unfortunately...
So you could be Tom Howe 2.5.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my dad died so young that was never a problem.
Okay.
So I never was a junior. But
you never were a junior. You're never Big Tom and Little Tom. You were never Tom and Tommy.
Oh yeah, no, it was definitely it was Tom and Tommy for sure.
My dad went by Jack. My brother went by John, and my brother's son, who is the third, goes by Jack. So you know they kind of did the alternate which name we're going to use here.
Well, it's interesting. Young people today, we got to get to Carl here, but they everybody I knew had a nickname, pretty much. Now the reason for that, you say, why does everybody have a nickname? Well, there were 40 kids in class, most places, and even high school there was 25 or 30, and there had to be 8 or 9 Toms in some of the classes or gyms, or so if you just went by first names, it didn't get you anywhere. And in my mother's generation, my grandfather's name was Al, my uncle's name was Al, and my aunt married another guy named Al.
You're lucky you weren't in a Polish family, because everybody would have been named Chester.
Or Stash. How many Stanleys are in the Polish community?
Stanley, yeah, Stanley and Chester.
No, so there always was a Stash that would do it, you know, different than a Stanley. But, I mean, there were practical reasons for it, right? Or you could be like the Flynns, our buddy Flynns, our friends from Indianapolis, that decided to have so many kids that you actually had to refer to your own child by his first and last name to differentiate him from the Tom next door. So it was always Tom Flynn versus Tom McCauley who lived next door, right? They had so many kids. They were all the same names. Bizarre world.
It was bizarre world.
Anyway, Kevin, thank you.
Hey, I will sign off. And,
wait, who are the Irish playing tomorrow?
They're playing the Naval Academy, the undefeated United States Naval Academy at noon Eastern, so it's at 11 o'clock for you on CBS.
Where are they, out east somewhere?
They're in Maryland, yeah.
Well, did they do Yankee Stadium a couple years ago with those guys or something?
I think they have Yankee Stadium later for the Army this year.
Well, that'd be cool to go to.
They're undefeated as well.
At my bucket list, I'd like to go to an Army-Navy game, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that'd probably be pretty cool.
They'd be all dressed up. We couldn't take Lou with us, though, because he'd be rooting against both sides.
Yeah, that Lou's, you know, he's...
You got to be careful with that guy.
He would be conflicted here.
Is he? What would he say? Would he say we go right to Carl?
Okay.
Carl, how are you, buddy?
Oh, boy, oh, boy. You have your chat window open? Commentary I've been throwing back at you guys?
Actually, I didn't. So what did you think of the thing about all the oil tankers running around transferring oil in the middle of the sea?
So there actually are regulations on this, international ones, and obviously it's kind of difficult to enforce them on the high seas, right?
Who's even supposed to do it? Who's even supposed to enforce them?
Well, okay, so here's where things get a little interesting. Admiralty law, by the way, is really weird. Okay, so all the things you think you know about, you know, like how you tag somebody for responsibility and, you know, things like that. Admiralty law goes back well before America and was developed as a way to prevent various sovereigns and other malefactors from hiding from the responsibility that they might inflict on somebody. And so it has some interesting provisions in it. For example, a vessel is a person and you can arrest it.
Really? No, admiralty law and the rivers in Chicago, it's admiralty. And I got intercoastal in Florida and stuff, is admiralty law?
Yes and no. Okay. But anytime vessels are involved, it can be implicated. Anytime you have any kind of vessel. But in international waters, the U.S. Coast Guard, along with everybody else's Coast Guard for that matter, can theoretically board you, and so there are issues, okay, that can arise. And by the way, they can shoot you too if you refuse to be boarded.
That's a little harsh.
Well, we used to have this this piracy problem, right? I mean, you know, and in fact, there still is some of that. And for all the people who love to talk about toxic this and that and the other thing, one of the only branch of the military that is specifically authorized in the Constitution is the Navy, and it was first as a standing force. And it was first used to go after the Barbary pirates who were enslaving both white and black people and put that down. And it was Muslim crazies that were doing it.
Carl, my curiosity, you know, whenever somebody says something, I think it's something stupid. How the hell we talk about our ships and station in the Red Sea and so forth dealing with the Houthis, and right. how you support them with oil and ammunition and food and all the other kind of stuff. And, you know, we've talked a lot on the show about the logistics. We had Mike on to talk about it, and obviously Lou talks about it. How in God's name do you send 3 or 4 or 8 wooden ships to Africa? How do you feed the guys? How do you have enough bullets and enough shells? How do you get there with any force to do anything with anybody? You're lucky you got there.
Well, you would be surprised at, I mean, you know, but for toxic white masculinity, you know, Columbus wouldn't have gotten here either, and he did, and but for the same thing, that slave trade would not have been interdicted, but it was.
Well, I know they did it. I'm just saying. They had to be built a pretty sturdy. I mean, was there a place they could stop and like get food and armor up? What if you ran out of bullets and you're in Africa? It's a long way home.
Well, it was cannonballs.
Well, I know.
Yeah, it's you know, you have some islands out in the Atlantic. Okay, I mean, you know, we have the, you know, not very many. Okay,
well, you have Bermuda and a couple others.
Well, more to the south and over towards the east. Okay, you know, we have the Atlantic hurricane season tends to, you know, come over the top of those to start with. But it's the sea is so vast and thy boat is so small, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, before there were GPS units and things like that, the way that you figured out where you were was with a sextant at night and a chart, which, by the way, was hand-drawn and probably not all that accurate. And God help you if you missed that island, right? Because, I mean, you could only see about 10 or 15 miles.
They had
the Earth.
They had clocks by then, didn't they? So you could tell if you had a clock.
But they weren't accurate enough over long enough periods of time. Okay, so basically you use the sextant as a way to do that. But the Cape Verde Islands were the furthest out thing, which are pretty much due east from the Antilles. All right. The problem is they're not very big. And if you miss them, okay,
yeah.
The next place you're going is the coast of Africa, because that's the next. But that was one of the things is that, you know, because you can only now, you know, you get up on the top of the mast, you can see a little bit further, but still, realistically, you're talking about, you know, 10 to 15 miles is all there is, because of the curvature of the Earth, right? And that's as far as you can see land. If you're not accurate enough to figure out where you're going, I mean, if you think about the thing for the, you know, those guys with those tall sailing ships when they first came over, you know, to what is now considered, you know, the New World, right? You know, they set sail out of Portugal, and head in this direction, and they're, other than once you got past the islands that were off there, and there are some. There's a set of islands in the North Atlantic as well, pretty much straight off from Portugal. Okay, but once you go past those islands, you know, Santa Cruz and things like this. Once you go past there, the next thing is Bermuda, which is pretty small.
Yeah,
and then you run into us. Okay, so. But yeah, I mean, it's you know, and of course the British colonized Bermuda. It still is a British protectorate. It's considered British territory. And so, you know, there you go. But yeah, you're supposed to the general navigation rules are that you are required, anytime you cannot be certain a risk of collision doesn't exist, you must assume it does. Okay. You have as your first and foremost requirement not to hit other things, regardless of. So basically, if there is a collision, it is almost never the case that either of the parties involved in it is completely absolved. It is proportional liability. It's not like a car.
If you turn your transport and pander off, I think that might do it.
Well, that certainly is a problem, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, but, you know, in your car, if you get rear-ended, the guy that hit you is always to blame.
Right.
Right? All right. You know, I mean, even if you stop short, hey, man, I saw a squirrel in front. Doesn't matter. The guy hits you from the back. It's his fault. With vessels, it does not work that way. All right. The only exception is if you're not under command and flying the correct day shapes or lights to show that you're not, i.e. you've had a machinery breakdown and you literally are incapable of control, then you're likely to be exonerated, although you might get tagged for the reason why you're not under command. Okay.
Sort of like the guy in Baltimore.
Well, that's a really interesting... That whole thing's an interesting situation because they're trying... The lawyers are trying to void the normal way that sort of a thing would resolve and tag the owners of the ship with the full liability. That's an uphill climb, but they may get there based on what is...
Well, you have to wonder...
Well, they may get there on that one because of what's been discovered. But
where was it? Where was that ship headed? It was heading across the ocean, and it conked out about 50 feet from the dock. Obviously, your maintenance wasn't so hot.
Well, that's what's been discovered from that. I've written a series of articles on it. What has been discovered is that because the steering gear and the engines on modern vessels for emissions reasons are all electronically controlled, okay? The older vessels, their engines were entirely mechanical. In fact, the boat I owned was entirely mechanical. Once the engines were running, as long as they had fuel, air, and oil, they continued to run. And you could literally, and in fact, there was a shrimp boat out in the water when I had my Hatteras that got... We were out fishing, and they got hit by lightning in the middle of the night.
Really?
Blew out every piece of electronics they had. We saw them. They were all lit up, pulling nets, doing their thing. They were way out, maybe 4 or 5 miles from me, but I could see them. And they got hit by lightning, and it immediately went completely black. And I was like, uh-oh. So I motored over there because there's actually... The other interesting thing about admiralty law is you actually are legally required to assist people, not property. But assist people if you can do it without putting your own vessel or complement at material risk, and you can actually go to jail for not doing it. Okay, you have a legal obligation.
Well, it's like Alaska. If somebody's on the side of the road, if you don't stop, you're in trouble.
Well, in almost every case, I mean, if I see you broke down the side of the road, your car's on fire, I don't have to stop. I cannot be tagged for refusing. So,
Alaska is different, I believe.
Well, I think Alaska may be different, but in general, that's the case. Okay, I have no duty to assist. On the water, that is not true. And so anyway, you know, I mean, it's the right thing to do anyway. But I motored over there, and the entire electrical system was destroyed. But they had mechanical... It was an older boat. They had mechanical engines. They were running at the time it happened. And they had a compass. Of course, they knew which way land was. And they declined our assistance to, you know, of course, I couldn't do anything for the boat, but I could take their complement off because we, you know, if they wanted their people, they wanted to leave, we had the ability to take them. Everything was working on mine. And they declined our help. You know, they were just going to wait for the sun to come up because they had no running lights, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, then they'd make their way home. But basically the rule is any piece of equipment you have on board, and the transponder is required beyond a certain length. Any equipment you have on board must be in use if it is serviceable, and you must be using it in your best attempt to avoid collisions. So yes, you are supposed to have that thing on if you're away from the dock, okay? Because it is an aid to navigation. Same thing with a radar. If you have a radar set and there is a reason to be using it, it's night, it's not clear blue skies, da da da, it actually would provide you better visibility than a pair of eyes. You're supposed to have the set turned on. Okay? Whether you need it at that moment or not, it's supposed to be on because it is an aid to you not hitting things. And you are required to do everything in your power to avoid that from happening. And so that's, you know, But yeah, vessels do this kind of thing when they don't want anybody to know what the F they're doing.
Well, what, right? I mean, what so implication in there was all the oil is coming from, and we've speculated on this how many times.
Well, it's illegal. There's sanctions on who Iran can sell it to. Okay.
Is there anybody else that has sanctions on them other than Iran for oil?
I don't know if there's anybody. I think Venezuela might.
Are they sanctions? They just can't do it.
I don't know. I don't track who's sanctioning who today.
Yeah. you got to get the report every day. Who's sanctioning who? Yeah.
Well, the international relations.
Well, I mean, Russia's sanctioned, right?
Well, yeah, Russia's sanctioned, but there's. The thing is that this stuff is very leaky in the general sense, but at sea transfers like this are extreme risk things.
Oh God, yeah, they kept saying, even said in the article it has become. But am I correct? Because I've said it a bunch of times. I like being correct once in a while, especially if I say things that if you have the right guy or person, you give them a cup full of oil out of something, they can tell you where it came from.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing is true for, if somebody cooks off a nuke somewhere, we would be able to determine where the material came from that was in it.
Okay, so in other words...
We know whose plutonium or uranium it was that was in the core.
But if somebody pulled up with a tanker in Louisiana, and it was the right guy, and we don't enforce laws anymore, and he had oil that started out in Iran and made a couple of changes...
We would know.
We would know if we wanted to.
That's correct. We would know. You could. It's there are chemical differences. Oil is a mixture of things. Okay, and there the other thing too is that the type of oil, and particularly its sulfur content, is and whether it's light or heavy or somewhere in the media, the middle. Yeah, I mean we quote it all the time. WTI is West Texas Intermediate, right?
Yeah.
Which is different than light sweet crude, and it's very different than heavy sour crude. You do have to know what you're handling because refineries are set up differently. You have to run considerably higher temperatures and pressures to handle the heavy sour stuff. A lot of refineries cannot process.
Wasn't that the reason? Well, I mean, Iorda's is still. It's another example of my big life story about this. Pipeline that Biden shut down. That was to replace for a couple of refineries down in somewhere down there the Venezuelan very sandy kind of crap with the tar sands very sandy kind of crap, right? There's no way you were going to divert that oil from the tar sands to the refinery here in Joliet. I mean, it would screw the thing up totally, right?
Right. So essentially the oil that you are going to run has to be compatible with the equipment that you have.
And if it's heavy, everything's got to be heated the whole way or it won't flow.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of difference, okay, between them. I mean, and ironically, for all the people that scream about the environment and how terrible we are. We're evil. We like to, we're killing Gaia. Chief, you're old enough. You know that's a lie. Okay, you lived through the time when every time that you came into downtown through Gary, your eyes watered, and the air stank.
Oh yeah.
You the INM was a poisonous sewer. I mean, I grew up with this. Okay, and I watched the transformation. Where my parents lived. There was a chemical plant fairly close to there. I went by it two or three times a week, just doing ordinary life things in the back of mom's car, and your eyes would literally water out of your head when you drove past this place. And then we had an open hearth, a steel mill that wasn't very far from the house, so you could see it light up the sky at night when they opened up to do their pours. All the water was unfit to drink, swim in, or eat the fish out of.
Oh yeah,
but all that's gone. Okay, well, all that's not true anymore.
Let me ask you this: we're having. I always go jump from topic to topic, but to me, they're all kind of the same topic. I was talking to Lou yesterday regarding the study I read years ago about how there were 300,000 people, and this was, you know, 15 years ago, actuarially should be alive, but because they were in Vietnam for any reason,
they're dead.
They're dead.
Right.
And
right.
So when I was a Ute, I was working for Pullman, which I talk about all the time to people's boredom. There was a YMCA there, and at lunchtime, a bunch of us go over to the YMCA. Well, if there were four or five of us, we'd play basketball, and they had showers, for those that want to ask. But when I was kind of by myself, either my brother, or sometimes I'd come down, we'd play handball, but I'd go out and run in this park. There's a park down the block, and I'd run my 4 or 5 miles. It was, the pollution was bad, and they had ozone alerts. And you could tell when you were running that it almost felt like you needed somebody in front of you to cut the air. You're like,
oh no! And anybody that lived out near Denver, every single day that there was an inversion, there was this gray smog that hung over the. You know, I mean, it was horrible.
But I wonder. I'm going to say, and I know kind of where you're going with this, right? At least I think I do. That I survived it, okay? But I was young. I was never a smoker, which I think helped a lot. But how many people from that area that maybe worked in some of these places? And then had this when they, you know, went out to do something outside. How many of them got 10 years off their life or 15 or 5 or 2 or something? I don't think, well, I honestly believe, you know, my Italian family, Irish family, I never knew who the hell was who, but because they're all dead. The Italian family, most of them came from Italy. Now, the weird part is, Carl, they were all pretty short, right? And all their kids were like a lot taller. You know, so you wonder what the hell. And then we're talking, you know, 5'9 to like 6'1, the averages. I mean,
right.
And a couple of the guys were like 6'5, they're bigger than me. And it's Italians, you know, duh. And I'm going to say the first group, most of them lived to in their 90s, a couple of them ended up with Alzheimer's. The generation here, you know, this is in Columbus, Ohio, I'm going to say there were out of the 12 kids, 5 to 6 died of some cancer before the age of 45.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that was not environmental related.
Well, of course it was. Yeah. And you know, but here's, and by the way, that I don't have two extra eyes in the back of my head growing up, you know, next to that stuff is pretty amazing, yeah. Right? I mean, and I did grow up with it, all right? And then over the period of time, particularly, you know, but this was the point I was making in the article that I put out the other day. If you're 40 or younger, so pretty much everybody that's not in our generation, right? If you're 40 or younger, you never lived that, or at least not as a sentient being. I mean, maybe as a baby at the back end of it, right? But not as a sentient person who actually had recognition of what was going on around you. Because, you know, that doesn't happen when you're, you know, when you're 6 months old, right? I mean, you know, that point of awareness is different for different people, but it certainly isn't at, you know, at 6 months. And all these people today that are screaming about this stuff and how we are so terrible in the United States, we, not the people in India, not the people in China, we, okay? They are all crazy. They're bat crap insane. And no one should sit and listen to that kind of preaching from those folks or the politicians on this point. If you want to go after...
You know the place by me, General Iron? You know who that was.
Yeah.
Well, they couldn't wait to get rid of the scrap place. Now, there was some pollution that came out of there, and once in a while there'd be an explosion, which wasn't good. But compared to the stuff when I was growing up, it was like baby stuff.
Oh, seriously. I mean, look, you know, you and I are in the generation before 1975 when catalytic converters first showed up. And by the way, it was 1991 or 2 before closed-loop controls came, because that was OBD1. Okay, it was the first onboard diagnostics for cars. Every single vehicle stank.
Oh, yeah.
From the moment it started until it was shut off, you could kill yourself in minutes with the exhaust, all right? And that was just simply because in order to prevent the engine from destroying itself, you had to deliberately run it a little bit rich because there was no way to know exactly where the mixture was under all operating conditions. And if it ran lean, it would detonate and explode. So you had to deliberately set the carburetors or the fuel injection system a little bit on purpose.
Did you ever see one either with... I had a GTO with a big quad on it, right?
Yeah.
Which was... When you turn it on, you smell gas, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
But did you ever see one that had the three deuces on it?
Oh, yeah.
God, did they stink. Oh, God.
Well, but the thing is, you had to do that.
All right, I gotta tell people what three deuces... Ricky, have any idea what the hell I'm talking about?
No.
Well, carburetors were two-barrel or four-barrel. I guess there were some one-barrel.
Three two-barrels.
Yeah. Instead of having one big four-barrel, big quad, a big honking carburetor type of thing, you actually had a manifold that would take three two-barrels, like, right in a row. So you had three carburetors. What you ever gained from that, I have no idea. All I know is my guy, I used to take my car to get it tuned up. How's this for a place? Willie's Carburetor and Ignition Laboratory, where your car was dyno tuned and power timed.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Do you have any idea what I just said, Ricky?
No,
but I do.
A dynamometer. They actually took your car and rolled it onto this dynamometer, and the back were these big metal rollers. So they'd lock the front wheels and actually run the car up to like 100 miles an hour, and actually timed it while it was moving. Hence the term power timed.
Yeah, which by the way, was a little dangerous if anything went wrong for obvious reasons, right? So, but the thing is today, you have all modern engines run the same way, right? I mean, there's minor differences in implementation, but they all work the same way. You have oxygen sensors in the exhaust. They measure the mixture in real time and adjust the fuel delivery in real time, and therefore... the engine, except when it is very cold, when it first starts, those sensors have to heat up before they come online. And one of the later inventions is they put a heater in there so it comes online faster. But once those sensors are working, your engine is running at almost exactly stoichiometric. In other words, a correct air-fuel ratio so that all the fuel burns. There's no extra. The other thing about the early catalytic converters is because they didn't have oxygen sensors, if you parked over the top of dry grass, you might set it on fire.
Oh, without a doubt. It was so hot.
Because they ran so hot as a result of that extra fuel. Today, nobody pays any attention to that anymore. But boy, you used to, because you could start a fire that way. And so, but these improvements, they're also why your car doesn't get 5 miles a gallon anymore. Okay, because you're not throwing a bunch of unburned gas out the back.
I used to get 16 on the highway in my quad 425 cubic inch.
Yeah, but you know what? That same engine would get 20 or 25 today. Yeah.
Well, because
it was closed loop and it's not wasting all the gas.
But a quick summary of what we're talking about, Carl, because we've got to go on to the markets, and is there actually really a difference between the candidates in terms of your investments? I haven't been able to...
Oh, yes, there is.
Well... Well, let's talk about that. But, there was a guy who wrote this thing from Core, and he was talking about the same kind of stuff we are. And somehow or another, he's like 55-ish. He got pictures of his dad and his uncles that all I think they'd all fought in World War II. They'd worked in the factory and all smoked. And he showed a picture of those guys lined up at age 55, then him and his two brothers.
Right.
You'd swear him and his two brothers were 40 and the other guys were 70. It's a massive difference just by looking at them. Just in the hard knocks your body took back then, which you don't take as many now. And it's
right.
And what I'm curious on I've talked a little this week, and we talked just a bit on Monday or Tuesday, where I know that there's massive differences in the way the two people talk and the way they look and the way people think that they're going to govern. But in terms of, I'm just curious how much flexibility anybody really has. I mean, I look at the last 8 years, we've never seen anything quite like this. Essentially two people running from what I consider to be the worst 8 years of presidency in my lifetime. And the two people that did it, well, she's the vice president, so you can say she didn't do it, but whatever. The two people that did it are basically running, telling you how the other one did worse than they did. But if you take
Well, yeah.
but if you take the 8 years together, if it was one person there, you'd look at it and say, God, this person gets an F, right? And but I'm saying, I don't know, you know, one wants to lower taxes to bartenders. The other one wants to give somebody, or says they're going to give, you know, money from. The fact is, they've got a real serious fiscal problem. And now the money supply just came out for September. It's on the last 2 months, we're on a 5.5% annual rate increase. You're not
right. Well, Chief, as I pointed out on Tuesday, in the first few days of the fiscal year, they put $750 billion on the, you know, on the national debt, and some of that is the normal game playing that goes on at the end of every fiscal year. Okay, and people, you know, people always are breathless about this kind of thing. But the fact is that is the case for some of it. However, the scale of this, all right, when you've got people talking about, oh, you know, our current government is doing everything it can to, you know, cut inflation down to size, and then they turn around and they commit a blatant act of inflationary policy.
Yeah,
you know, right in front of an election. All right. Now, I mean, okay, you know, it just happens to be that the fiscal year ends, you know, 5 weeks before the election. Okay, fine. But the fact of the matter is that the lying, the blatant lying, and that no one in the media on either side of the aisle, I mean, not even Fox News called this out, okay? No one called this out. And yet it is, you know, this is the power of Janet Yellen, who happens to be a Biden employee, a Biden-Harris employee. She has the absolute power to cut those checks. Now, they were authorized by Congress. Otherwise, they couldn't have been cut.
I think she's an employee of the people who gave her the $7 million between her stints in Washington.
Yeah, and you know what? That corruption goes deep, don't it?
Yep.
But here's, you know, but if you're asking, is there a difference between the two from a standpoint of outcomes, from an economic point of view? Absolutely there is, and there will be. And I have always maintained that when you get down to it, people do and probably should vote their wallet, okay? But they always do. And what we have now is an administration that is arguing that which you saw happen, that which you had happen to you, didn't happen, because if you vote your wallet, you will not vote for them. Well, but trying to tell me I didn't have my grocery costs.
Okay,
doubled.
But when you say that, again, it goes kind of. I mean,
Chief, you know, I know where you're going with this. Okay, but here's the reality of it. If you're the pilot, and you're in the left seat, and the plane crashes, it's your fault. Whether you're the mope that put the water in the gas because you weren't paying attention, whether you filled the tank, or whether the guy on the ramp did it, it doesn't matter. It's still your responsibility, and it's still your fault.
Okay, but when you say vote your wallet, it comes down to specific things.
Now, yes,
there's no question that 8 years ago, if you voted your wallet and you had money, and you voted for Trump, you were rewarded.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you voted. So, yes, if I was a big-time millionaire, and all of a sudden PTI is making, you know, $20 million a year, there's no question that his actions were better for me and my firm monetarily than somebody else. And so if you're in that ilk, now, he did raise the standard deduction a little bit, and I get that part. But
he didn't raise it a little bit.
Well, but all the other stuff.
More than doubled it, Chief.
Okay, but if you pay taxes on your house or something, he took it away from you. So I mean,
if you lived in a place that had high that thinks that you ought to fork over $15,000 a year for a bungalow. Yep.
Okay, but stop. When he did that, it was 8 years ago, and it was just the rich people in Connecticut. Well, with the inflation that he is every bit as much and more so responsible for than this guy, than Biden, that they're in it together. Now, how many people have a $10,000 tax? It's like the alternative minimum tax.
Chief, I really wish you'd have a little bit of reality. Why don't you go look up my old home near Lake Cook Road? The property taxes have not gone up that much in the last 10 years. But one of the reasons I left Chicago was because they were I saw exactly what happened to my parents coming in my area where I lived. It did. And that house currently carries a property tax bill of over $20,000 a year.
I understand. But
and by the way, that's been true for the last 20 years.
Okay. My point is, when it was like the alternative minimum tax, when they passed that, what it affected 250 people?
Oh, no, look, I had to pay it a couple of years during the aughts, so I know all about it.
My point is, now you have somebody who's 25 that was 17 when Trump was doing this insanity, and Biden. Now he looks at it and he goes, I don't care what these people do. I mean, Donald, if he lands in the Oval Office the first day, he's going to say, we're going to cut taxes, and somebody's going to say, Donald, here's a calculator, here's a piece of paper. You tell me how the hell we're going to cut taxes. I mean, or Kamala, I'm going to give everybody $25,000 for a house. Here's the same calculator, here's the same piece of paper. You tell me where you're getting the dough. I mean, right now, I think whoever it is, the combined last 8 years and all the years before it, has boxed them both into a corner. I don't know what they can do. I really honestly don't.
Yeah, I mean, I
don't think you're disagreeing with me on that.
No, I'm not. What I'm pointing out, though, is that, all right, so I've got my old house up here on Zillow, and the property tax levy on it crossed $20,000 in 2010, and it has not been lower than that since.
No, that's my point.
It's 12 years. And by the way, it's gone up about 10% since then, so it's actually, you know, on a somewhat longer time frame, it's you know. I mean, yeah, okay, it's gone up, but a lot less than inflation, right?
It's... There's some single family homes on my block that, you know, attorneys and people that bought there years ago, so they didn't pay $1 million for it. Like, I'm going to say that when Trump's people did that, it was all he was screwing the people in Connecticut because they didn't like him, and they had high taxes and it's a blue state, so we're basically
wait a minute. There's another way to look at this, okay? Which by the way, I think is a perfectly valid way to look at it, and which you're not taking into account, which is that Trump's position was that what the states were doing and the counties with that tax rate was forcing someone like myself, who lived in a state that didn't do those things, to pay their property tax bill. All right. Okay, now, this is the same thing that happened with Obamacare.
But you give these guys, if they're on your side, too much credit.
I don't give them too much credit. I'm saying, look, Obamacare was an attempt to rescue a system that was about to collapse.
I understand, but
it's the same thing, Chief. Why should I, as a reasonably healthy person who is not, you know, I don't shoot IV drugs, I don't boff boys in the ass, I don't do these kinds of things, right? I don't do things that put me at extreme levels of risk for seriously expensive medical interventions in order to stay on this side of the grass. That doesn't mean I can't have a bad thing happen, right? Because I can't. And by the way, I'm very aware of how screwed up the system was because I ran a company. I was the guy that signed the checks to the health insurance companies for my employees. And incidentally, more than once, I ended up having to go to war with those people on behalf of one of my staff members who was getting screwed.
All right. What I'm trying to say is when he put the thing in, whatever his usual mouthy crap is about who he's doing it and why, the simple fact is it didn't affect that many people. Now, here we have a massive inflation bulge 8 years later. The $10,000 is impacting everybody on my block. It's impacting people that never even dreamed they would be impacted 8 years ago. Is my point,
Chief? You're right, and you know what? You know whose responsibility that is. It's yours and the people on your block because you let the city government Chicago do what it's done.
Whatever it is, the thing should be indexed. Even if it's a good idea.
Absolutely never. No, under no circumstances. Because then what you're going to do is you're going to say that the people in the city of Chicago have the right to tax me in Tennessee.
All right. I'm trying to make an economic argument.
I understand right, you're making an economic argument.
If I decide this number should be 10,000,
right,
for whatever stupid or intelligent reason, I'm going to punish these states, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm going to somehow force these people to vote the Democratic governor out because their taxes are less because I'm whatever dumb thing that they, let's say 10,000 is the number, and over the next right. and over the next 8 years, part of which I'm involved in, we raise the money supply 60% or whatever the hell we've done, 55. So these houses have damn near doubled. The cities now, what they have to pay people with the goods they buy for running a city have damn near, I'll say they're up 50%. Of course the taxes are going to go up. But now we've got this limit of $10,000. It should be, because of what we did to the economy, it should be 15 now. Even if you agree totally with the reason why it was in there in the first place, 10 is not the number anymore. If it was the number then, now it should be 15 is all I'm saying.
Well, now wait a minute. Now see, this is where you and I disagree. All right, and here's why. What I want and what I think serves the purposes of the people in general is for the imposition of what was done in that instance to be a ratchet. And that ratchet is supposed to tighten on the necks of the politicians in the states who seem to think that their citizens have an inexhaustible capacity.
You're not going to get there through this. All you're doing is
okay. Well, you know.
Okay,
what?
So let's make it 2,000. Make people pay even more that they don't have, and in that case, we're going to get rid of all the Democratic governors, and in 10 years, everybody will be fine. That's bullshit, Carl. That's bullshit.
Well, all right. So what you're saying is that because you can't come up with a political solution that doesn't involve you getting hosed. Because you and your cronies up there in Chicago won't throw these people out, won't take the Chicago public schools, which produces a 90% illiteracy rate, and shred them, because that's where a huge part of the money's going.
Unlike most,
and by the way, $150 billion for illegal migrants, a huge part of which is being spent in the city of Chicago.
I'm talking
because you have the right to impose that on me.
I'm just saying it's a separate subject.
It's not.
It is, because
money is fungible.
No matter what we do, okay, in this country, we have an unusual way to tax people, in a sense that we tax them like five different ways. Most countries in the world don't do that. We do. And all I'm saying is, whatever it is, whether it's a sales tax, whatever, and all these incredible, you know, blue states that you keep talking about, a lot of those people, if you total up the taxes there, they're just the same as other places.
I'm not saying.
What I'm saying, I think it's unconscionable if somebody makes $200,000 a year and is paying sales tax, is paying property taxes, buys a car that is inflated out the ass, and just paid $10,000 in taxes on that thing. That somehow or another, you're gonna tax them on the gross. I mean, how many times can you tax the dude on taxes that he just paid?
Well, you know what? But why is it that the government that is closest to the people, which in your case is the city of Chicago and then the state of Illinois, right? That's the closest to the people. The government here that's closest to me is the county government in Sevier County and then the state of Tennessee, right? The federal government is further away, right? And my representation within the federal government is two senators and a representative from my district, right? And by the way, that vote is rather diffuse because there's a whole lot of other people that live here, right, in the state of Tennessee. And the if you look at it from a demographic point of view, the majority of them live in either Memphis or Nashville. They don't live here. All right. So when you look at the Senate, that's who elects the senators for the most part, because that's where the people are. Okay, fine. In Illinois, who elects the senators? The people of Chicago. Well, and Springfield and Champaign-Urbana. All right? But that's who elects the senators, because that's where the people are.
Well, I would hope so.
That's fairly diffuse. But you know what? All of your folks in the city of Chicago elect your alderman, elect your mayor, and by the way, your state representatives, who all seem to be perfectly fine with that fat pig Pritzker screwing you blind on a daily basis in the city of Chicago. Well, all right. So you know what? Now you rightfully squawk about getting screwed blind. I happen to agree with that. I think it's crazy what you deal with there. But why should you be able to force me to eat that when I don't have any vote in the city of Chicago at all? I have no voice.
Okay, but I mean, it's Indiana. The total tax in Indiana is almost the same as Illinois.
Well, you know, and one of the things that I think is so interesting about this is that you see this all the time and boy, does the media lie about this garbage. You know, Florida.
Well, you right wingers lie about a bunch of stuff too. A lot of the states that you're talking about are the places that are the best places on earth. New Mexico. What, 10% of the people in New Mexico work for the federal government?
Excuse me. I was about to rip on Fox News, which is on the side of the aisle.
Okay, I'm saying these numbers, simple fact is the government ends up, I can go in Idaho, and these are legitimate arguments. If I go to Idaho and I have my ranch, I don't care about homeless people somewhere. I don't care about somebody somewhere else. I shouldn't have to pay for it. Okay. I mean, I'm not saying a lot of this stuff needs to be shared, and some of it doesn't. We're supposed to argue over what is and what isn't. That's what politics is all about.
Well, that's right, Chief. But here's the basic problem. Okay, you had a healthcare system that and it goes back to Nixon and Eisenhower and the original deductibility above the line for health coverage within employers, which has a long and sordid history. Nixon amplified it, and of course he was a Republican. Okay, he amplified it with the wage and price controls because fringe benefits were exempt, and so it was wildly amplified during the price control years. As a result of that, and got ensconced into the psyche of the American business zeitgeist, if you will. And then that system, along with the flat-out refusal, and by the way, this goes back to the whole Arthur Anderson thing, too. Okay, we all know who was president then, right? Where there was an informal policy, which essentially, although it became formalized, and it's actually written policy in the Department of Justice, that you will not criminally prosecute corporations for violating the law. You will not do it, okay? Because it could cause unemployment.
It will cause. You know what though? You got to be careful. I mean, I know you are.
Well,
careful,
now hold on a minute. Now I get it that Arthur Anderson was a flawed case, okay? But we're not talking. The problem is, it wasn't that there was a conviction that was ultimately overturned on technicalities, or whether it was valid to do that or not. That's not the point. The point is, it became formal policy of the Department of Justice.
But you should know. I think you do. But you know why?
What
the policy came out that way?
Well, I know. I know what the alleged reason for it was. If you have a felony conviction, you're barred from federal contracting.
The people that are in a lot of under industries that are allegedly regulated. Okay. Meaning banking, meaning the securities business, exchanges, all these people, they all have a, quote, regulator.
I understand that.
Right, but the regulator, you think it means that they're going to be spanking people.
But they don't.
They don't. So, but the point is that the accounting firms, of which there was the Big Eight, then there was the Big Six, they squawked the blue streak that they didn't want a, quote, regulator.
Right.
And now, with the issue that I see is, I could, you know, I'm not going to rant off on maybe some other day on abuses that I felt that I've seen on trading floors and in my industry.
Yeah.
Virtually all of them committed by the big firms.
Right.
But when you see a bank, I mean, if you saw a Wells Fargo, for instance, or Bank of America, get this massive fine, okay, without admitting or denying and all this other kind of crap. But if there was no regulator, that would be in court, and it would be a felony.
Okay, but Chief,
let me finish. If, for instance, back on the old trading floor, or even now, okay, there's people trade against, they get a first look about every trade anybody does. The system, to me, is horrible set up. and it's fine because we know how to deal with it for clients and stuff. But if you went to, say, in a trading crowd, for instance, a real old story, if some firm came in, you know, there were firms that fast money and this kind of crap, they would come in, and most of the time, virtually all the time, the trading crowd was absolutely straight until one of these firms would come in and say, we want to do the 50-60 call spread. We're willing to pay, what's the market? 3/8. Well, we're willing to pay 5/8.
Right.
And we want to take half of it, and we'll split the other around with you schmucks. Okay, so if it's a 200 lot and they do half of it, they just took $1,250 from somebody.
Yep.
Okay, but now, even if you ever wrote one of these firms up, which nobody would do, right? Because they're too big to spank. If you wrote one of them up, the last time I checked, $1,250 a felony. So
yep.
So even if they were written up, they might get fined $200 without admitting or denying, blah, blah, blah. Now you fast forward to Arthur Andersen. They end up in court. And I'm going to say, you know, whether it was flawed case or not, I actually think you're right, Carl. All the documents they supposedly destroyed, they actually could produce or something from what I remember. But anyway, so they end up with this felony. And now there's another rule in the book that says if you have a felony-like event in any kind of regulated industry, it's not a felony. But, oh, by the way, if you have a felony, you can't be an accountant anymore. So they're out of business. That's insane.
Well, no, wait. No. It's not insane.
It's insane and you do it for one and not all the others, what I'm saying.
No, well, yes. To not apply it equally is insane.
Yes.
Okay? But do you want... Here's the basic problem I have with this. Fines never deter anybody corporate context.
You know, I'm with you on that, 100%.
Right. They never do. The only thing that does... For truly rich people, and I don't care if it's a corporation or it's an individual, the only thing that deters truly wealthy individuals from doing really bad things is prison. And in the corporate world, the only thing that deters corporations from truly bad things is the same thing, and the effective prison for a corporation is you're forced out of business.
What do you...
Now tell me this.
All right, specifically, all right, so Goldman, the same?
I'll get very specific. During the financial crisis, okay, and this is the reason I'm blackballed on all the mainstream media outlets today, that I cannot be booked as a guest on Fox, on CNBC, on CNN, MSNBC.
That's because they don't have guys that are the commentators that are sharp as me that can handle you.
No, I'll tell you why I'm blackballed, because I've been told... I know people that work at the networks. When the crash came and all of the documents started to show up.
Which crash?
08.
All right. We've had many crashes.
I'm talking about the 08 crash specifically.
Okay.
During the financial, that was when I started getting booked, because I was doing daily podcasts and I started getting phone calls. Okay. I'd been writing a blog for a while at that point. And I showed up on some of these shows. I was on Olbermann. He tried to come after me. He got his head handed to him. So did a few others. But I was on CNBC several times. And I was on CNN. I was, you know. All right. The reason I got blackballed is because I said on the air multiple times, you hit multiple firms in the big banks who were on tape telling customers that these were great securities and that they should buy them, subprime tranches and such of this, slice and dice stuff, within their own people on tape and in emails. They were calling them vomit.
Sounds like the 1920s when they'd pump and dump stock and they'd say this stock's worth nothing.
Yep. And so they were deliberately deceiving customers. Now, several of them got sued. And essentially all of them managed to win the suits on the basis that the buyers were skilled practitioners in the financial markets and should have known better.
Well, they probably were.
Well, guess what? Fraud is still fraud.
I would agree.
When you deliberately misrepresent something, okay? And what I said is that the only way you're ever going to solve this is the corporate death penalty. You convict these companies of felonies.
Well, then what do you think of their
officers and directors in prison, and you bar them from federal contracting, which instantly dissolves them.
We only got a couple of minutes. What is your how close have you been following this Madigan case?
Not close enough.
I don't pretend to be an expert on it either, but from what I see...
Well, I'm just saying, not close enough to have an informed opinion. So
well,
that's,
the only thing that it seems to me that has occurred is if he was... Commonwealth Edison appears to be the big dog in the room. If he was given all kinds of contributions from Commonwealth Edison, which, by the way, I'm sure he was. They all are down there, but he's probably worse. Somehow or another, if he's the bribee, they're the briber. And I think they have paid some sort of a fine. And maybe one of their people was convicted, who was like an underling. Some lady, I think.
Right.
And so somehow it became a civil case for Commonwealth Edison. The settlement, I think, also included a clause that said they have to testify against Madigan in a criminal case. So I don't know nothing about the law other than anecdotally what I learned from people on the show and friends of mine. How the hell can it be a criminal case for one side and a civil case for the other side?
Well,
it's exactly up the alley with this. Okay, how does Arthur Anderson?
I don't. Look, all I know is that if we have, for example, we now know there's a report out on this, that the government spent $1 billion on intentional false claims during the virus time.
All right. Yeah,
they actually went out and they told this up. And this was advocacy of lockdowns, forced jab policies, mask mandates, the whole thing. They knew full well that none of these things were effective. They did it anyway. Now, motive is irrelevant when it comes to fraud, except to prove that there was a monetary intent behind it somewhere, right? In other words, if to commit fraud, I have to screw you out of something of value for my pecuniary interest, whatever that might be. All right. The exact nature of my financial interest is not material. The fact that I did it for that reason is sufficient to convict me. So if I screw your grandmother out of $1,000 and I did it because I want the $1,000, that's a crime.
We're so far. You need to come back to Chicago for a little bit. We're so far beyond anybody wanting to prosecute anybody for anything. I told you the story about my biker lady.
But you have to fix that, Chief, or you're never going to solve anything.
I told you the story about my biker lady, didn't I?
Yeah, I think so.
Where she was bitching a blue streak at the guy who was parking the bike lane and immediately went through the next stop sign. That's the way the entire world now thinks for some reason. I don't like it any more than you do, but it's there.
Chief, I understand that, but the thing is that this is where one of the differences is. Okay, you do have a difference in top level political candidates right now. One of the individuals is hell bent for leather on trying to criminalize the First Amendment, and you have you actually have Harvard professors who are now out backing that. Now, that is exactly how you lose the ability to ever dissent and ever have any kind of democratic process ever again.
I would have, if the Republicans would have come up with a fairly right-wing, moderate, decent person, I would have actually done the Chicago way. I'd have found a way to vote twice, Carl.
Chief, I am disgusted at the choice that we have before us. Okay,
I would have found a way to vote twice. Honestly,
and you know what? I am very unhappy with the general state of political discourse and what's going on in the country right now, and have been for a long time.
I feel the same way about having this guy three times as I would have had Hillary on the ballot three times in a row. I could never vote for her either.
And you know what? It was bad 2016. It was bad back when Obama was running. The choice on the other side of the table was unacceptable to me as well.
Who didn't? Okay. Who did, you mean McCain?
Yeah, there's,
I didn't know enough about him other than, you know, that
I knew way too much, and I wrote a number of articles about his candidacy, and that the last thing that he should ever have is the levers of power.
Really? Ever. Was he dead off the wall?
Chief, he's a big part of the reason that Ukraine is in ruins right now.
Well, I know he had some, you know, was he a neocon or something different?
He was worse than a neocon.
That's what I'm asking.
He personally is a big part of the reason that Ukraine is in ruins.
So he was, I mean, where would you even put
he
him?
He showed up over at Maiden and gave a speech.
I know, but he wasn't a Cheney Rumsfeld guy, was he?
Oh, he most certainly was.
But, I mean, he wasn't in the group, I don't think.
He was worse.
Well, okay, that's what I'm asking.
Good God. But, you know, this is, this is not a new problem, okay? It, you know, for everyone that says, oh, you know, this is the first time, the worst time this has ever happened in America, that's nonsense. I mean, even back within recent history, we had multiple instances of this. But I cannot sit for someone who says, if you do not do this thing that we know doesn't work, we know it doesn't work, we're going to take away your civil rights and you can go to jail.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you. Matt,
all right? We're agreeing
on all this stuff.
I understand, but that is the current election paradigm that we're in. Whether I like it or not, that's where we are.
Is there any chance? I mean, I'd really like to see. Let's say if he loses, is there a chance in the next 2 to 4 years the Republican Party can, what I consider to be, can they really right themselves and be something for everybody?
God, you know what? I don't know, but I'll tell you what. If no matter who wins, there is a massive economic crash coming. It has been baked into the cake with this inflationary crap that they just pulled in the last 3-4 weeks. It's going to show up in January or February.
It's been ongoing for sure.
I know, Chief, but they threw gas on it.
I know, they threw gas on it. Well, okay. Money supply going back up the way it is right now is unconscionable.
Well, they threw gas on it, and they did it on purpose. And so, you know, now how's that going to be dealt with? That's going to have to be...
You and I are voters, and we do a podcast, and we like to tell the truth as best we can, even though we argue about the truth all the time. But do you think... that the people who own all these shares of stock and these houses, the people who really have the power in this country, do you think the people are pissed off at the stuff you and I are pissed off at? They're not pissed off at all. They're happy as a clam.
Well, I don't know. The housing around here...
Okay, by and large, it's staying up there and the market goes up every day. They're not unhappy.
For now, we'll see how long that lasts.
I get it. SP Futures up 22, NASDAQ Futures up 114. Hey, the young lady... I met last night and was going to come on the show from Australia. I got to tell her to slow down her talk because we can understand her. She's in the horse racing. I mean, horse racing is huge over there. And we talked about. I told her that I actually saw a secretariat run. What do you think she had on her phone?
I don't know.
A picture of the secretariat's heart and how much bigger it was than a normal.
Oh
horse.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was when that horse died. They cut him up to see what was, you know, what made him so special. And his heart was like 160% the size of a normal race.
But he also had a stride that was longer than everybody's except maybe Ruffian, the female.
Well, yeah, but the thing is he had a cardio capacity bonus that, how do you overcome that one, right?
We'll run over a minute. There was a guy. The Tribune used to let somebody... write a real intensive back page of the sports section, science of virtually everything.
Yeah,
and the guy would take the whole page. One week it was on. I've said this before about pitchers throwing and what, in order to throw without injury, it has to be perfect, tip of one finger to tip of the other, whatever. And he talked about sprinters. And no matter who you are, no matter if you're a big old fatso, or whether you're Jesse Owens, it's a certain number of steps. Where you reach your top speed, then it's a question: can you maintain it? And nobody can really maintain it. So, like, you know, but he did a thing on horses, and people's talking about cardiovascular on horses. They can get in shape, but there's no such thing, because every time a horse leaps, he takes air in, and when he lands, It's not like a marathon runner where you can get your breathing can get more efficient.
There's only so much there.
There's only so much they can do. And he says it really comes down to the length of the stride itself and the amount of time they're on the ground before the next one starts, where a millisecond makes a huge difference.
Well, yeah, that, and but also lactic acid threshold is a
but
thing.
The Secretariat's stride was like an extra 4 feet the normal horse. The only one that was close to him and might have been able to beat him was Ruffian.
Yeah,
Widow died in Belmont. But it's all about how long they're on the ground and how far. Now you got to be in shape too, obviously.
Well, yeah.
But the point is you can't get a horse to only breathe every 2 steps. It ain't happening.
Well, and you can only train to within the limits of physiology.
Yeah.
Right.
But you can get a swimmer to get so cardiovascularly better that they can come off the thing and go half the pool underwater where nobody else could, you know, type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can get there with humans, but you can't with a horse. Once they go up, they breathe in. When they go down, they breathe out. There's no way around that. Anyway, I got to see him race, and it was pretty spectacular. And she's going to come out and tell she and her friend, two friends, are going around the country. Whenever they go, they're such sports fanatics, they tour all the stadiums. And she said they toured the one in Nashville. She said the place is gorgeous, the football stadium down there. Is it that nice?
I haven't been in there. I stay away from the hives where getting an Airbnb for the night means you might get home invaded in the middle of the night at 3 in the morning and shot.
Well, I went by that once, and it was built the same time as Soldier Field was.
Oh, it is very, I mean, I say it was the outside like, it was looks like, great. I've just never been inside.
It was 40% the cost. It looks twice as nice.
Yeah, well, that's because it wasn't built in Chicago.
Yeah, well, that would be the truth, my friend. That's because you're just up 21, there's a viewer's up 112. Back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.